However unpredictable life can be, the beginning and the end tend to be clearly defined moments. Our first breath and our last are often documented with a specific time on a clock. Even after a long illness, the end is the end. For writer Rachel Louise Snyder, a recent loss has not been so final. She sent us this story about her friend, Ian.
My friend Julie claims that if she stands at the top of a sand dune and does a single somersault, she'll be launched by force into a series of gymnastic flips until she lands with a thump at the bottom. Our friend Don wants her to prove it. "Show us," he says. There are four of us sitting atop a sand dune in Indiana looking toward the bottom, which is hidden in shadow by trees and shrubs and forest life. "Not here," Anne says. "You could disappear in those woods and we'd never find you." The three of them laugh. But right away, before I can stop my mind, I think, Ian. I think, it could happen. He disappeared on November 1st, 1999, my friend Ian. And no matter how much I try, I cannot stop him from blasting into my mind anytime the words disappear or gone or find or search are uttered. When he'd been gone 7 weeks and two helicopter searches had been done, and his wife had already gone to look for him twice, I spoke with Ian's father-in-law. "Nothing yet," he said when I asked. His voice lowered on the yet. Ian disappeared on a dusty village road in Nepal just before dinner when the sun hadn't yet set and tourists milled around the village, Sibru Bensai, on their way to climb the nearby mountain at Langtang National Forest. Ian was an experienced hiker and climber. He'd done the British equivalent of the Ironman competition. Last time I stayed with him and his wife Jane in London, Ian woke at dawn every morning, ate a hearty Marmite and baked bean breakfast, and went off to swim before work. Then he rode his bike to the office and home again. The thing about a missing person is how open-ended and loose everything feels. "It's like a movie," people say to me when they hear the story. "Like a bad movie." But it's not like a movie at all. A movie has an ending. When I send Christmas cards now, I can't decide if I should send them to Jane and Ian, or only Jane. There's no form to my sorrow. No category, no definition. The place of the missing. He is missing. He's not dying or ill or held captive. He's not dead. We don't know this for sure, of course, and most signs would point to the latter. 4 months after he disappeared, the British Embassy finally declared him dead, after his coat and a shoe were pulled out of the river. But to Jane and her father, I never mentioned this as a possibility. "Any word?" I'd said to her father. "Nothing yet." My friend Anne, who knows him, says the hardest part for her is shutting down her imagination. He's dead, but we can't stop from thinking of all the ways he could have spent his last moments. Drowning in the river that runs through Sibru Bensai, though he was an excellent swimmer. Attacked by a wild animal, though there aren't any to speak of in the area. Taken by terrorists, though the few around have never, ever targeted tourists. Knocked on the head and left wandering, though amnesia is rare and typically brief. He is just gone. Society does not have a mandate for a person's disappearance. There is no funeral, no burial, no memorial. To do any of these, to send a card or flowers or food, is to suggest a permanence unafforded to the missing person's family and friends. Death you can grasp. It's tangible, the heart has a shape for it. But to the missing you look and reach and find only air, like falling forever. There are no rituals to follow, and until the family, until the ones closest to Ian pronounce that it's time, our hope was shelved. The rest of us wait in suspended anticipation that somehow, somehow ours will have an ending. Not even a happy ending. Happy, sad, whatever. At some point, it doesn't matter. Just an ending. The absolute momentum of the world is shocking to me. Recently, I was at the hardware store buying grout, and all at once I reached up and I felt tears running down my face. And the reasons were so big and so hard to explain that the teenage boy helping me shuffled away as quickly as he could. I didn't realize I'd been thinking of a time when Ian helped Anne and me find our way out of a Guatemalan jungle. The thing most striking when I remember these stories is that for a moment while I'm telling them or thinking them, I have absolute faith that he's out there somewhere and on his way back. A year and a half now. What will I think in a decade? What will hope be to me then? Or to Jane? I tell my friend Julie not to roll down the sand dune into the woods, and the four of us walk away in search of a better hill. They, because they need proof of her somersault to flip theory. And me, because I fear the shadow of the trees.
Rachel Louise Snyder is a writer in Chicago. Her recent book is called The Light at San Miguel Dolores Church. She comes to us by way of Chicago Public Radio.